Mr. Steve Drucker is on the phone, everyone. He is a public interest attorney. He has written this marvelous book. Alter Jean's Twisted Truth, which is going to be the topic of the discussion here today. He is a longtime supporter of biointegrity. He has done investigative work in a most novel way, in that he's approached it from a legal standpoint and looked at the corruption of science through the legal eyes. And that's what is the groundbreaking part of his book here today, but I'm going to let him talk about that. So everyone, please give a big round of applause for Stephen Drucker.
I'm sorry I'm not there in person, but I had a prior commitment to speak at a major organic festival here in Maine for about 8 months, and I'm deeply grateful that Jane is able to be there and take time out of her very, very busy schedule to participate and be there in person. I'd also like to thank our hosts, Jan and Jerry. It's just terrific that they've made their home available for this event. I'd like to thank Eileen Proctor and for her great organizing skill, and also Carla DeJesus, who actually helped initiate get me in touch with Eileen. One thing, though, I do want to mention before I begin is a little addendum. In my book, I do approach what the FDA has done from a legal standpoint, but when I analyze the activities and the of the scientific community, it's from the standpoint of science, not the standpoint of law, so I want to make that clear. Suddenly gained full awareness of the actual facts about genetically engineered foods, and all opinions about them became firmly based in solid science. Well, if we adhere to the routine rhetoric of the proponents of the products, we have to predict that such a universal wave of enlightenment would cause all opposition to them to vanish. Because in the rendition of reality that they propound, the opposition has been based solely in ignorance, and concerns about risks have been due to a lack of scientific understanding. But in actuality, in the world we actually inhabit, the phenomenon that would rapidly vanish is not the opposition to genetically engineered foods, but the foods themselves. That's right. If the actual facts became widely known, the entire genetically engineered food venture would quickly collapse. And that is because, as research in several different countries has consistently shown, the more that people know about genetically engineered foods, the more they learn the facts about them, the more concerned they become. And that's why, despite the repeated pretensions about wanting to educate the public, the biotech promoters have strenuously striven to suppress or distort critical facts. Moreover, this twisting of the truth has reached massive proportions. My book documents case after case in which eminent scientists and scientific institutions have stooped to deception in order to enable the genetically engineered food venture to advance. And it demonstrates that if the truth had been told and the facts openly and honestly aired, these novel products would never have come to market, and we would not be having this discussion this afternoon. Further, the sheer magnitude of the deception in itself demonstrates how strongly the evidence weighs against the safety of these novel products. Because if the evidence were as supportive as their advocates claim it to be, there would have been no need to distort it. And that's really quite, should be obvious to everybody. If you have the facts on your side, you don't need to do anything except just present them. You don't distort them. You don't resort to trickery. And the fact that trickery has been resorted to time and time again and that the facts have been misrepresented or suppressed, again, is strong evidence against the safety of genetically engineered foods. So let's examine a few of the key claims about the safety of these foods and the acceptability and their acceptability, and let's compare the claims to the actual facts. And this is an exercise that will make it quite clear why widespread knowledge about these facts would doom the colossal venture that's producing and promoting these novel genetically engineered foods. Now, one of the claims that we hear repeatedly is that genetic engineering is actually nothing all that new. I'm sure you've heard that time and again, and generally they like to refer to it as genetic modification to make it sound a bit more minor and benign, that genetic engineering is really not that different than conventional breeding. It's essentially the same, and that since time immemorial, since the very first introduction of agriculture, development of agriculture, the saving of seeds and the replanting of seeds that weren't, just simple natural selection, there's been a seamless continuum for every advance in agriculture since then, and that genetic engineering, that phase of genetic engineering, is just the most recent step, the most recent link in that seamless continuum. Well, many scientists, especially scientists who are independent of the of this push to genetically engineer our food, see it quite differently. One of them was the Nobel laureate George Wald, who was a professor at Harvard University. And in referring to genetic engineering, Dr. Wald called it, quote, the biggest break in nature that has occurred in human history. Hardly a seamless continuum there. And he continued in discussing this biggest break in nature. Such intervention must not be confused with previous intrusions upon the natural order of living organisms. Another eminent biologist who has likewise criticized the claim of seamless continuum is the molecular biologist Lieb Cavalieri. Now, when the American Association for the Advancement of Science held its first forum on genetically engineered foods, it selected Dr. Cavalieri to represent the position of science. There were only two other speakers at the main morning meeting, one representing the side of the industry from Monsanto and another speaker representing the side of consumers. So it was Dr. Cavalieri, who was so respected, he was selected. He roundly criticized the most of the basic assumptions of the genetic engineering venture. And he made it very clear then and a few weeks later when he spoke again in Washington, D.C., that the scientists that are claiming that genetic engineering is essentially the same as traditional breeding are perpetrating a sham. That was his word, a sham. He said it's disgraceful, and he said they should be ashamed of themselves. Okay, what about another claim that we frequently hear on behalf of these products? The claim that not a single product of genetic engineering has ever harmed a human being. Okay? In fact, one of the officials at a department of the United States government claimed not so much as a sneeze or a sniffle has ever been associated with one of these products. Well, that doesn't comport very well with the fact that in 1989 and 1990, the very first ingestible product of genetic engineering caused a major epidemic in the United States, an epidemic that killed dozens of Americans, seriously sickened thousands of them. The most recent estimate of the Center for Disease Control is that between 4,000 and 5,000 Americans were impacted with this novel illness that was created. And hundreds of those who were sickened remain invalids to this day. Now, that product of genetic engineering, the first one that hit the market, was a food supplement of the essential amino acid L-tryptophan. L-tryptophan, obviously it's an essential amino acid. It was a supplement that was used safely by hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people throughout the world for many years. Never an incident. It had been produced from bacteria that naturally synthesize L-tryptophan, and there had not been any problems. The epidemic, it turns out, was traced back to a single manufacturer, and that manufacturer had tried something new. In order to pump out more L-tryptophan in the same amount of time, it had genetically engineered the bacteria, given them extra copies of some of their own genes so that they would produce more L-tryptophan. But that was a forced overproduction of a substance that the bacteria ordinarily produce. And there are several indications that that forced overproduction, which occurs in basically every ingestible genetically engineered product, there's a forcible overproduction of something. In this case, it wasn't even a foreign product. It was a product that, again, was native and necessary to the bacteria. But any time the biotechnicians strain the metabolism of an organism, there's a risk that several unintended kinds of consequences can result. In this case, one or another highly toxic contaminants were generated. Now, that particular supplement was found to have a very high level of many different contaminants, but they were all at low levels, very low levels, so low that that product was safe, was pure, according to pharmacological standards. It was extremely pure. So, in ordinary case, contaminants existing at that low level of concentration, such a low level, would have been harmless even if they were ordinarily toxic at usual levels. But this particular toxin or toxins was so harmful that it caused that epidemic. Now, was it produced by the bioengineering? The FDA has admitted that that cannot be ruled out. That was in private, they admitted it when they had to. In public, they tell a different story. It cannot be ruled out. And the evidence as a whole strongly points toward the genetic engineering as the key cause of that toxic contamination. It's an entire chapter in my book dedicated to that incident because it's important. The facts were actually covered up. In fact, that epidemic, the evidence suppressed so successfully that most people don't even know that there was an epidemic that was linked to the very first ingestible product of genetic engineering. And the fact that it was has major implications for every product of genetic engineering. Became that the products of genetic engineering are carefully regulated, and that the FDA is regulating them very well, and that they undergo scientific assessment. So we really should have confidence in our FDA that all of the concerns just are groundless because our FDA has certified that these genetically engineered foods are safe, and it's really rigorously protecting the integrity of the food supply. That's another fantasy. In fact, the FDA does not regulate genetically engineered foods one iota. Okay? And again, not only can a genetically engineered food be put on the market here in the United States without even a smidgen of testing, according to the FDA, the manufacturer does not even have to inform the FDA that the food is being injected into the food supply. Now, although the FDA does conduct a purely voluntary consultation process designed to project the illusion that some testing and regulating are actually going on, the process is far too superficial to provide any reliable results. And even the agency's biotechnology coordinator admitted, in a rare moment of candor, that it is not a scientific review. So why has the FDA adopted such a lax approach? Well, in 1986, a directive to federal administrative agencies was issued by the Reagan White House, establishing a policy to foster the biotechnology industry. And this policy has remained in force throughout all successive presidential administrations, including the current one. But in pursuing this promotional policy, the FDA had to ignore the advice of its own scientists. When the lawsuit I initiated forced the FDA to hand over its files on GE Foods, I discovered that the overwhelming consensus among the agency's own experts was that the foods entail unusual risks and need to be thoroughly tested before they're marketed. The pervasiveness of concerns is attested by a memo from an FDA official who protested that the agency was, quote, trying to fit a square peg into a round hole by trying to force an ultimate conclusion that there is no difference between foods modified by genetic engineering and foods modified by traditional breeding practices, unquote. She then declared, and this is another quote, the processes of genetic engineering not only disregarded all of the input they received from their scientists, they fraudulently claimed they were not aware of any information showing that GE foods differ from other foods in any meaningful or uniform way. Moreover, through its fraudulent actions, not only has the FDA been violating the standards of ethics, it has been violating the dictates of the law, because U.S. statutory law expressly requires that new additives to food must be proven safe through standard scientific procedures. And although the FDA has acknowledged that GE foods are under the purview of this law, they have deceitfully circumvented it. Now, it's important to realize that the FDA has pulled off one of the biggest bamboozlements ever perpetrated on the public. Although the law clearly charges the manufacturers of genetically engineered foods with the burden of proving they're safe, the FDA has sneakily and illegally shifted that burden, and they've allowed the manufacturers to market the foods as long as someone else cannot prove they're dangerous. And amazingly, they've been getting away with this colossal fraud for over 20 years. Okay, let's turn to one more claim, the claim that extensive evidence proves that these foods are safe. Well, of course, as I earlier mentioned, the extensive deception in regard to the evidence weighs against that because it shows how strongly the evidence weighs against safety. But let's examine some things in more detail here. There are hundreds of scientists and several eminent scientific institutions that have reviewed the research done to date and have said that not only does it not demonstrate the safety of genetically engineered foods, it raises serious ground reason for concern. For instance, David Schubert, a professor at the prestigious Salk Institute for Biological Studies, has recently written, quote, as a medical research scientist who published a comprehensive peer-reviewed critique of genetically modified food safety testing, I can state confidently that it is false to say such foods are extensively tested and have been proven safe, unquote. However, while no tests have proven any GE food safe, many have resulted in adverse effects on the laboratory animals that have been consigned to consume them. And such studies have stood up to peer review, to the peer review process of standard scientific journals. Unfortunately, in many cases, these adverse outcomes were not detected until after the foods had been approved by regulators in Europe and in Australia and other countries. And I mentioned that it was in other countries because the FDA doesn't go through formal approval of these foods at all. They don't need any formal approval in the U.S. Any manufacturer can dump a GMOs on our market without even alerting the FDA that they're going to do it. Okay, let me give you one extremely important example about when a team of university scientists examined the data from 19 of the feeding studies on soy. soy and corn varieties, comprising 83% of the genetically engineered foods that people have been actually and regularly eating, they found that 9% of the measured parameters, including blood and urine biochemistry and organ weights, were significantly disrupted in the animals that ate the genetically engineered feed. Moreover, the greatest disturbances were to the kidneys of the males and the livers of the females. And the scientists emphasized that because livers and kidneys are the major reactive organs in cases of chronic food toxicity, these results should be viewed as danger signs, something the regulators had failed to do and unfortunately continue to fail to do. Also, even if every test that has so far been conducted had been conducted very rigorously and it returned only positive results, it still wouldn't demonstrate that genetically engineered foods are safe because they've all been too short, all except just a very few. Most of them been short-term studies, if they've used the whole foods at all, or intermediate studies, 90-day studies, but those are not long enough, and in fact, when long-term studies have been done, especially a very important long-term study, it showed that some serious problems didn't even start developing until well after the third month, the end of the intermediate studies that generally are employed and are used as the basis for safety testing. So that's just a flavor of why I think, even just with what I've discussed with you, you get a flavor of why the proponents of genetically engineered foods have been so eager to stop the facts from being known, to suppress the facts, or to distort them. This massive venture to reconfigure the genetic core of the world's food supply is not based on sound science, as its proponents claim. It's actually based on the systematic subversion of science. And if the facts were fully and honestly aired, which they will be at some point, when the facts, I should say, are fully and honestly aired, when people really are apprised of the evidence that's been distorted or suppressed, this massive venture will quickly collapse because it is based on the foundation of falsehood and fraud. And it's high time that the leaders of the world, the leaders of the scientific community who have been duped by the proponents of these foods, were made aware of these facts, and we can get the agricultural system redirected toward producing safe and sustainable products in ways that really are sustainable, that are benign for the environment and healthful for the human and the animal consumer. Thank you very much.